Hello and welcome to the RCOP podcast for April 2025 with me, James Jenkins, Head of Customer Development, and Matt Cook, RCOP General Manager. For those who are joining us for the first time, and there may be some, this, Matt, really is designed as what, kind of a lighthearted update on 3D Secure payments, primarily for our customers, but also people who are generally interested in payments, the world of 3D Secure. And it's kind of our monthly update with you and view from the bridge. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's our opportunity to just shoot the breeze about our favorite topic, 3D Secure. There's not many people who, I'm not even sure that sentence has ever been issued in the history of humanity, but for us, it's true, actually. It's true. Yeah.
And this I don't want to, this may shock you, but some people have told me that they do listen to this podcast.
Yeah,
and,
good.
I've had some examples of people in the car or walking the dog. So, you know, if it's a spring morning and you're thinking, how could this be better? I'm inhaling nature and life. You could also learn about 3D Secure and payments ecosystem while you're doing that as well. So learning while keeping the dog healthy. What more can we say? So
two birds with one stone. There we go.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So we should. I thought we'd kick things off, Matt, with something, well, that we track really every month. I look at it every day. And it's great to see here in the US that, I mean, it just seems to be growing and growing up and to the right. And we talk about it a lot because it's very, very important. And that's the temperature here on the East Coast. You see what I did there? I don't know what's happened.
You got me.
Well, I got my knuckles wrapped by a customer recently for talking too much about US merchants. So I'm gonna dial that down, and we're gonna talk about once we've spoken about the weather, we'll talk maybe more about the issuer side. But it's phenomenal here on the East Coast. What happened overnight?
Yeah, it's a brief window. Enjoy it while it's here. It doesn't last very long.
Very good. Very good. I think I went into a store to get a soda, as we say here in the US. That's a shop to get a can of pop, as they would say in the Brits. I walked, and when I walked out, the whole world was green again. It's incredible. So spring is definitely here. So, all right. So, yeah. So to that point, we were in Florida recently. And as ever on these podcasts, people remain nameless. But thanks to you know who you are. Who hosted us down in Florida. Great fun, really, really enjoyable evening and meal and dinner and kind of conversation the next day. So that was great. And this is where really the subject came up around issuers. So I thought maybe Matt would start around what are we doing to support issuers? And that, and we will touch upon the merchant side, because what we're doing with merchants is really to help merchants, but also feed that downstream. And I think some of the feedback we got was, are we still, and maybe this is the question I'll start with, do you think we're still in kind of a blame game here? That merchants we're not optimized yet, right? We see challenge rates too high, authentication success rate not quite where we want it to be. We see authorization rates too low. Are you seeing a blame game still happen, an understandable blame game, or are you seeing this move to more of a collaborative state, which we all want? What do you think?
I think it's a little bit of both, actually, because I think, well, we call it the blame game. The reality is fraud liability matters. And who is on the hook for that fraud is a real monetary factor in how transactions traverse the network. And the system has been set up such that if merchants use 3D Secure, the issuers are on the hook. And if the issuers are on the hook, they're going to play defense, they're going to score transactions, they're going to use a solution such as RCOP to enforce their authentication rules so that they can approve those legitimate transactions when they come into authorization and weed out the rest of the fraud and all the garbage. So I think 3D Secure will always have a bit of blame game built into it simply because merchants use the protocol in some cases to make sure that they're not liable for fraud. And then issuers have to use the protocol to make sure that when they are liable, that they minimize any of the damage associated with fraud. So I think there's a bit of that. Now, that has historically been, let's call it 95% of the purpose of 3D Secure, until you get to places like PSD2 and regulatory environments where then it becomes there's a third actor here, which is it's not just about fraud liability, but it's about regulatory compliance. And for that, you absolutely have to continue to use 3D Secure. But now there's this third use case that is becoming more and more prevalent, which is it's a communication protocol between merchants and issuers. And the ability for merchants to signal to an issuer when something looks risky and they want them to check it out, or something actually doesn't look risky and they just want them to let it go through and trust them. So I think the degree of trust is starting to improve. It's not quite where we would hope it to be, but I do think that we're seeing the green shoots of trust between merchants and issuers as they use 3D Secure.
It's a really interesting point around the data only, right? The RCI 06 piece, because yeah, to your point, the liability shift is around, there is, you are throwing that liability, you know, from merchant to issuer, and there is, you know, there's a cost associated with that. And then from a merchant's point of view, if that issuer is playing defense and ratcheting up the challenge, there's an impact to the merchant. So there's a really interesting point. And maybe as data only kind of feeds up, and we've been talking about this for a while, about using 3DS for signal versus authentication, then yeah, it makes more sense that there will be more collaboration because it's less combative. If that makes sense. What are you seeing happen on the data only side from maybe from an issuer point of view? I mean, any feedback from the market in your conversation?
If our intel is correct, I think that we're going to start to see a dramatic increase in the amount of volume associated with data only, in particularly in the US market. And I think, we're starting to, I also believe we'll start to see more exemptions in PSD2 regulated environments coming over 3D Secure also. And whether it takes the form of TRA, which is kind of the equivalent of data only, in those markets. But I think that we're starting to see a lot more of that because there are a tremendous amount of merchants that are struggling with false declines. And their way to do it is, hey, if I give you more information, will you as an issuer please approve the things that are not fraud and take the foot off the brake a little bit? Because I think I'll be sending you more legitimate stuff than you actually are reacting to today. And so I think that we're going to start to see a lot more data only. And I think our friends at Visa and MasterCard are also going to pour a little gas on that fire and start to make use of 3DS more prevalent. And they use their financial penalties and things that they have in their toolbox to make sure that merchants are behaving as it relates to usage of 3DS and increased usage of data only going forward.
Yeah. It's almost as though, as ever, these things take time. It's almost like it's settling down now, because I think when PSD2 kicked in and volumes increased, then yeah, issuers reacted accordingly, which meant the merchants then looked for ways to kind of almost bypass 3DS. And there is the opportunity to do that, right? You can send exemptions direct to authorization. But to your point, you have this protocol there to share the metadata, which should, you know, increase intelligence across the ecosystem, which means we get higher approval rates through. And I see that if anyone hasn't seen it, the Square case study, I mean, when you're moving authorization rates up in the regions of, like, you know, hundreds of basis points, I mean, that just shows that the opportunity is there, right? And that's not going to be there for everybody, but it's going to be there for a lot, particularly of US merchants. But I'm not being drawn back into a conversation about US merchants, if anybody's listening in particular, so we'll pivot back.
Well, the reason that it's so relevant to issuers is as a cardholder, false decline is just, the word is unacceptable. It's unacceptable. And I will tell you, and I think everyone else on this, we are all cardholders of some brand and some bank or some issuer. And a false decline means I'm less likely to use that card, just what it means. And that is not in anyone's best interest. So if we can use data only, whether or not and even in regulated environments, the equivalent of data only or the North American market, for an issuer, you're going to get more transactions and not just 3D Secure transactions, but actually real payments and the actual value and the things that drive credit balances or the things that drive interchange fees. So I think that it's actually a very relevant topic. And I know, well, we do talk about the merchants a lot. It's merchants where the volume originates. So as an issuer, you have to be aware of what's driving the merchants. And I think the thing to be most tuned to over the next couple months is as data only increases, because I do believe that it will, and as large merchants start to continue to come onto the mark onto the network rather, how are we going to adjust our strategies, if at all, on the authentication side? And our argument there would be we're trying to help our issuers adjust those strategies programmatically through feature we're calling Smart Rule Set, which we've talked about a bunch on this podcast. But that's the way in which we think that issuers can become more immune or more intelligently handle these changes in a way that optimizes their approval rates and minimizes their fraud. And that's the whole game. That's the whole game.
Yeah, it's interesting. And joking aside, on the it almost brings us back to the idea of the blame game. The reason we started working with merchants was to serve our issuers better, because we saw that more and more of the decisions were happening upstream. First of all, is it going to be a 3DS transaction? But then, what data is sent and in what format, and is it reliable? And are they sending all 3DS or just the high risk transactions? And so actually talking to merchants and influencing that decision so it can be optimized downstream works for everybody. And I think, we're actively trying to get out of this blame game where we're pointing fingers at either side and actually saying, can we all just come together and make this system work better? I think that's gonna work. So, interesting.
Yeah, I think so.
Good. You mentioned Smart Rule Set, Matt, which of course is there designed that if a new merchant comes on board at 3 o'clock in the morning, maybe there's a flash sale or a new merchant appears. It could be a fraudulent merchant, it could be a genuine merchant. Those rules should be able to kind of cope and adapt with that. How's the adoption of Smart Rule Set going in your conversations with issuers?
Well, if I'm going to answer this honestly, it's behind my expectations. However, I understand why. I understand that when you are talking about changing a mission critical system such as authentication and changing the rules by which that system operates, it's a bit, you should take your time. You should be careful. You should be very careful. And which is why we're doing things like we've been running these in passive mode for almost 6 months now. So that we can have real data to say, A, B, here's what it looks like. Here's the smart rule set versus existing rules. But these banks have governance processes, all sorts of legitimate reasons why adoption is taking a bit longer and people are being a bit cautious with adoption. However, I think we're breaking through, we're breaking through that issue in a couple different ways. One is, first point, now we have case studies. We have issuers who are using it, which it's going really, really well. And that's a nice thing to be able to point to. And there's some banks that don't want to be first, but my caution is don't be last either. But I think that that's good. The other thing is we're now adjusting our approach a bit in that we're going to be allowing customers to take their existing rule set and just layer it on top of the smart rule set. And by doing that, it minimizes the change. And it really minimizes the change because if your existing rule set is still doing its job, and in many cases, this is becoming a little bit technical, but in many cases, that rule set, there's a chunk of transactions that aren't covered by any existing rules. And that can be anywhere from 0%, so rule set can cover everything, to 5%, we're seeing in some cases, all the way up to 20% in different issuers. And so by doing it this way and saying, all right, we take your existing rule set, we layer it on top of smart rule set, and then smart rule set will only work on that small chunk that isn't covered by the existing rules to start. And then everyone, it's a much smaller change. It's much easier because you don't really have to change a lot of the governance processes. You can choose to adopt smart rule set in a more controlled, smaller impact way. And then over time, we as a team, as your 3DS advisors, are going to suggest ways to start and peeling back the existing rule set so that smart rule set can start to take over certain portions of the strategy, whether that be the challenge portion of the strategy, whether that be the allow portion of the strategy or the deny portion of the strategy. And smart rule set will work on that smaller chunk where nothing is covered, but then also we'll start to peel back the layers and you can get and issuers can get comfortable with the way the smart rule set is performing on their behalf without having to just binary switch it on or off. So we're starting to adjust our approach in a way that I think it'll make it much easier for issuers to adopt because the data just is unambiguous. It's the smart rule set in almost every situation is delivering better performance than existing customer rules. And that's across all of the metrics, across allow rates, across challenge rates, and across fraud rates. So in all instances, we are doing a really good job of improving all of those metrics. So when you look at the data, it's a no-brainer. However, process and governance, there are reasons that banks operate in the way that they do. And we're trying now to adopt a strategy for adoption that allows people to move into these things with minimal risk. That's the way we're thinking about it.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I think for any issuers listening, that's the call to action. I know a lot of them are already engaged with the team on Smart Rule Set. But I think that the light bulb went on for me when we were talking this through is, to your point, if you are responsible for this system at the bank, your job is not just to stop fraud, right? I know we know this. Your job is to field the bad guys versus the good guys and let the good guys through. And the way that the system works is when those transactions come in, most of them will hit the rules in the customer rule set. Some of them will drop out the bottom. And it right now, the default typically is allow. So if those transactions are dropping out the bottom, what happens to them? Why wouldn't you put those through the smart rule set? And then we can lean more and more increasingly on it. And the analogy I was using, again, dangerous enough to use analogies, is almost like the self-driving car kind of idea. We can tell you that it can drive better than a human being, but I know first-hand experience, you want to build up to that. You want to know that you're always in control. And then as you learn, the system learns, and you learn about the system, you can dial it back a bit and you can rely more on the computers. And I think to your point, we've seen the data and just how effective it is. And this system's always on, right? So it's going to be on at 3 o'clock in the morning, if you use the analogy, right? At 8 o'clock on a Friday night, everyone's gone home, if a new merchant comes in, then the system can react accordingly. So I think it's a really clever and good approach. And I think we'll see more and more issuers lean on it. And on the model governance piece, I mean, I know a lot of the issuers are already, but if there are questions or things we can do to accelerate that process, let us know, particularly as we get towards, and I know it's April, I said it was May at the beginning, right? But it is April. Peak shopping season will be on us pretty quickly. So now is the time to get your model governance done and to implement smart rule set, lean on it as much as you can and have that confidence that we can then see the benefits during peak shopping.
Yeah, I mean, just one data point. So to your point about default allow, we were just reviewing some numbers this morning. A very large issuer had roughly 5% of their transactions were not touched by their current rule set. And that with the default allow, that means those 5% are just blindly allowed. And when you look at fraud reporting on that 5%, actually just about 40% of that 5%, so call it four, it's 2%, is fraud. So
wow.
Yeah, 40% really? Of the just blind allow is fraud. And so smart rule set will work on that and will likely bring that number dramatically down. And on big portfolios, sound like small numbers, right? 5%, 2%, whatever, but those are big dollar values. Those become large in these big portfolios. So that's a good example of, let's just start with that small 5% and we'll have meaningful, tangible results for you to take to your management team and say, hey, look, it's working. And so that's the new approach. And then we'll start to peel back different portions of this strategy.
It's really interesting. And that's the 5% that drop out. If you work on a risk profile and you think the next 5% would be allow via a rule, what percent of that is fraud?
Yeah,
So lean on us. Very interesting. Yeah. All right, good stuff. Well, just conscious of time. So what I'll do is we have just a few updates. So the newsletter, there's a lot of good content as ever in the newsletter. James Rendell was at the Invico meeting. The reason we attend those is obviously to be aware of what's coming in terms of the spec, but is also to shape and influence the spec. So reach out to your CSMs with input. We obviously provide feedback. That's where James Rendell writes his article in the newsletter. But let us know what you'd like to see in the next iteration of 3DS, and we'll keep you updated. The other piece in there is there's Erin Nichols' coffee talk. Headline there is use the method URL that's directed at merchants. Is very, very helpful. We have a merchant advisory group webinar on May 7th. Registration link is in the newsletter, and we'll be supporting a MAG London event June 8th to 10th, as I say, in London. And I think, Matt, we're looking to potentially run the next summit in London and Dublin around September.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be fun to get back together. You know, we were doing it every 6 months. It felt a bit burdensome and hard to get people to show up every 6 months. Although there were the ones who always showed up, and to all of you, I'm incredibly thankful. But now we thought we'd build the suspense a little bit and make it an annual event. So looking forward to seeing everybody back in September.
Fantastic. And maybe we'll celebrate 25 years of Arcot 3DS.
That's fun. Good idea. Yeah.
We'll have some fun with that too. Very good. All right. Well, I think on that, we'll end it there. Thanks, Matt. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And we'll pick this up again next month. Take care.